to both parties. This one purification of evidence discussions from persons providing information, documents, records, or articles of evidence, the location or identifying persons or items, the service of documents, and then also the execution of requests for search and seizure. And then there's FGMH assisting the availability of detained persons or others to give evidence to assist in investigations. And then in 5, we say this treaty shall not apply to extradition, execution in the requested part of criminal judgments imposed in the requesting party, the transfer of prisoners to serve sentences, which in any case falls under the line function of the Department of Correctional Services, and then also the transfer of proceedings in criminal matters. Article 2, other treaty, other arrangements, this treaty shall not affect obligations subsisting between the parties or the person to other treaties, arrangements, or otherwise, nor prevent the parties from providing or continuing to provide assistance to each other person to other treaties, arrangements, or otherwise. In Article 3, indicate the central authorities for South Africa is the Director General of Justice and the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and for Korea is the Minister of Justice, who are officially designated by that minister. And 2 again, we say the central authority shall communicate through the diplomatic channel or directly with each other for the purposes of this treaty. Article 4, just going to mention that the refusal or postponement of assistance, there we say in these cases we will, when we can refuse assistance or postponement thereof. Article 5, the request for assistance once again shall remain in writing. Except that the requested party may accept the request in another form in urgent situations. In such, or in any such situation, the request shall be confirmed in a writing promptly thereafter unless the requested party agrees otherwise. So they can fax or insist on confirming a writing after that. In 2 again, we say what will be included in the request, ATD. In 3, a request for assistance to the extent necessary part shall also include the memory list also, what should be included in the request. In Article 6, execution of the request. The request for assistance shall be executed promptly in accordance with the laws of the requested party, and insofar as not prohibited by those laws in the manner requested by the requesting party. So, if we receive a request, it will still be in terms of our law. We will execute the request in terms of our law. Return of in Article 7, return of material to the requested party, where required by the requested party, the requesting party shall return as soon as possible the material provided under this treaty. Article 8 is the confidentiality, where we say the information must only be used for the purpose of the request. And then the requested party, if so request, shall keep confidential information and evidence provided by the requested party, except to the extent the information and evidence is needed for the investigation and proceedings described in the request. Article 9. The requesting party shall not use or transfer any information or evidence obtained under this treaty in any investigation, prosecution, or proceeding other than describing the request for assistance without the prior written consent of the requested party. Article 10 is the taking of evidence, just a procedure. Article 11, availability of persons to give evidence or to assist in investigations. The requesting party may request assistance of the requested party in inviting a person to appear as a witness or an expert who in the proceedings or assist in the investigation, that person shall be informed of any expense to stand for the answers payable. So, normal. Article 12, availability of persons in custody to give evidence or to assist in the investigation, where we can transfer a person that's currently in prison for a specific period to Korea to assist with an investigation. Article 13 is safe conduct, where we say, subject to paragraph 2 of this article, a person present in the requesting party, person to the request made under Article 11 or 12 shall not be detained, prosecuted, punished, or subjected to any other restrictions of personal liberty in that part in respect of any acts or omissions or convictions which preceded the person's departure from the requesting party, nor shall that person be obliged to give evidence in any proceeding or to assist in any investigation under that, other than the proceeding or investigation to which the request relates. 14, Article 14, provision of publicly available documents and other records. Requested parties shall provide copies of documents and records that are open to public access as part of public register or otherwise, or that are available for purchase by the public, just to say what is publicly available documents. In Article 15, we make provision for the service of documents. For instance, we serve certain documents to the person in Korea, we also provide that in the city. Article 16, in seizure, we make provision for search and seizures. Article 17, the
can be headed, can be extracted, but we cannot extradite Thank you. with heard that you need the majority for the treaties. Five is not majority. Mohobi is around. Mohobi is around. You will waste the income. Can we check? Did we say majority? Because we are supposed to be nine provinces. And if you have five provinces, you have got majority. Now, what is majority? Maybe explain the majority to us so that we understand. Because I know there's five provinces, and that is the majority that we have.
Changes the rules for instance, for 76 legislation, we need a majority of provinces present. But in terms of extradition and 75 legislation, we need a majority of members, permanent members on the council. So we 10 permanent members, we need one more person. Mr. Mokobi's point is great. He's at the docs appointment and tried to contact all the alternatives, but unfortunately they will not hear them.
I know we still have other items to deal with Mokobi and us here. Thank you very much, Mr. Can we in the meantime allow the citizens of the toilet to continue their presentation? You are
thank you, Chair. My name is Lisa Kiyobuti. I am in the monitoring and evaluation component within the city of Secretariat for Police. I am with my colleague, Ayanda Mbaza, from my report, and Colonel Sain at the back from the SAPS. So I will then hand over to Ayanda to deliver the presentation. But firstly, I want to extend an apology on behalf of the Secretary for Police. She is delivering a presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Police Care. She could not be at this meeting. And at this meeting. Over to you, Ida.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm back from my desk. Our presentation is basically based on the challenges that we've experienced in our monitoring of how the SAPS is implementing the Domestic Violence Act. And this covers two reporting periods, which is the period from April 2011 to September, and then September to October to March 2012. Just a little background, the Domestic Violence Act number 116 of 1998 was promulgated in 1999, and it was with an attempt to provide victims with a legal tool to stop domestic violence. And as you can see, when you look at the Act, it's clear that the definition is flourishing in terms of how it defines domestic violence as well as relationships. However, the implementation has been negatively affected by a lot of challenges. The Civilian Secretariat for Police conducted a total of 300 visits over this past financial year in order to identify the gaps in the implementation of DBA and to develop recommendations for improved implementation. From all the engagements, there have been key common challenges that have been identified that impact negatively on the implementation of DBA, and this results in low compliance by the CPS. Some of the non-compliance challenges that were identified were as follows. The files are truly kept at the CSC, which is the Clyde Community Service Center, and in the patrol vehicles were not available in most of the stations. The way in which the registers and the forms were completed were poor and sometimes incorrect. And some elements of the Domestic Violence Act incidents are not recorded properly. They are recorded differently in the register and in the incident form, which makes it difficult to compare the two. And also there is a challenge with the management of the victim calendar rooms, which should be used to interview clients that are victims of gender-based violence crimes should be the private interviews, please. And most of the stations either do not have these facilities, and where they exist, they are not well managed. And then we've got a graph there that shows how many stations, the percentage of stations amongst those that were visited, that had a health and functional between friendly rooms, and which is 62%, and 24% that did not have, and then 14% that have the rooms but that were not functional. And with regard to these non-compliant issues that have been made, we've made some recommendations to the SAPL. And the first one was that a process flow chart on how to provide practical assistance to victims of domestic violence should be developed and posted in the CFC and in the victim friendly room for easy reference. The domestic violence at register needs to be reviewed and updated. For example, there should be additional columns in terms of putting the reasons for arrest, the details of the investigating officers, where a case has been opened, and space for signatures, details and comments by the inspecting officer. This will assist in ensuring that there is no communication breakdown during shift changes and also between detectives and the CSC where there is a need to follow up on cases. And this is based on the fact that sometimes you get, when you look at the register, you will see that there was no arrest where they were supposed to be. However, it's not recorded in the register, but when you follow up deeper, you find that an arrest had been made at a later stage, but by just looking at the register, you will not be able to pick that up. The non-compliance form should be at every station, and where the details of members who have failed to comply with the DBA should be registered. It's not available in most stations, and we have recommended that this form be reissued to most stations, and most station commanders indicated that they don't know what the form is all about, so we made a recommendation that they should be distributed to all stations. The management of the victim friendly rooms should be strengthened. For an example, in stations where there is a civil society organization operating or an active community policing forum, an MOU with the station should be drawn. This should clearly define the role of the SAPS, the CPS, and also the CFO and the volunteers, if there are volunteers. And the reason why we raise this is that we tend to find that in stations where there are these entities present, staff tends to take a back seat and not manage the centers properly. We also recommended that the SAPS should develop a volunteer management policy which will cover the screening and management of volunteers at the station. Another challenge is the recording of the domestic violence cases. According to the SAF CARE system, which is the crime administration system, the contravention of DVA is not interpreted as a criminal offence on its own. It's always linked to one other crime, maybe GBH, assault, GBH, or murder, or any other criminal. And this poses a challenge as it becomes difficult to assess how many arrests were made as a result of the contravention of the protection orders. The system also does not capture DVA incidents reported as they appear in the register. What we also found out was that there is no system of handling cases where the staff members are themselves perpetrators of domestic violence, and some stations will record business arrests within the register, and some use a different register, some stations use a different register to record these members. And also the subdisciplinary regulations and the national instructions do not explicitly indicate how these cases should be dealt with and what should be the consequences, you know, for members who have been perpetrators of domestic violence. Then we've got a graph with numbers of members within the 125 stations that have been reported as having perpetrated against the Domestic Violence Act. In the Eden case, we had 7 cases reported, incidents reported. In the Free State, we had 10 incidents reported. In Gauteng, there were 10 incidents reported. KZN, 5 incidents. Mpumalanga, there were 9. In the Northwest, there were 12. In the Northern Cape, there were 5. In the Western Cape, there were 11, which was a total of 88 members within those stations that were reported. And out of those 88 members, 55 members had firearms seized, and 12 members out of that also had cases withdrawn against them by the complainants. The recommendations that had been made with regard to recording is that the CAS system should be reviewed so as to recognize DBA as a criminal offense not attached to other crimes. And the system should also be able to capture incidents reported so as to make it easy to draw comparisons between incidents reported, cases opened, arrests made, and cases withdrawn. Also, it is recommended that the Employee Health and Wellness Program Division should conduct regular information sessions with employees at station level so that they can easily identify and intervene staff members that are at risk or in crisis. Members who commit acts of domestic violence are in direct contradiction of their self-commitment to protect women and children. Therefore, the substitutional regulations should have a specific clause on how to deal with members that are perpetrators of the Domestic Violence Act. Moving to the challenges now with the implementation. One of the main challenges is the training. According to the records that we saw at the station, out of the total 11,815 members in this station, less than half were trained on DBA, which was 4,208, and the rest indicated that they have not been trained on them on the Domestic Violence Act. And this impacts on the understanding of the Act. Even though we see that there is an improvement in the number of members trained, it does not seem to translate into improved implementation. And some of the key areas that display the lack of knowledge were the following. There is a Form 1, which is a notice that explains the remedies available to the complainant. Generally, members who are implementing the Act, who are at the CSC and in the patrol vehicles, do not seem to understand what this form is about, even though they should be issuing it to the complainant when they are reporting an incident. Arresting the perpetrator on contravention of a protection order. According to the Act and also the staff's initial instructions, a contravention of the protection order constitutes a criminal offence, and the perpetrator should therefore be arrested. However, there are conditions to the discretion that the police should use on whether to arrest or not to arrest. However, this is a serious challenge because members seem not to understand how to apply that discretion properly. Also, with regard to training, we identify that members that are sent for training are not the members that directly respond to domestic violence cases. Like you will find someone who is in the support unit who is not in the physical unit being sent for training, and that does not contribute to improving the station's level of implementation. Also, the other challenge with the training itself that was identified was that the way in which the training is presented, it's lacking practical scenarios. Even though the content is good, but the manner in which the training is presented makes it difficult for members to implement when they are out there in the station. And the recommendations with regard to the issue of training was that the Secretariat will conduct a joint visit with the SATF to some of the basic training institutions in order to observe the methodology of training and the academic informed recommendations. There was also recommended that station commanders should be obliged to discuss the Domestic Violence Act as a standing item during station lectures, and discussion should be based on areas identified by the commanders as in need of attention. Also, there should be clear and simplified legal interpretation on the issues of arrest after contravention of the order, and the role of staff and how the discretion to or not to arrest must be applied should come out clearly during training, station lectures, as well as in the station orders. The copies of the Form 1 and the Form 11, which is the notice to appear in court, should be added to the list of documents that must be in the patrol vehicle, and this must be added into the national instructions. And the Form 1 also needs to be simplified with a user-friendly language and space for signature for the complainant. It is also recommended that the DBA training should be evaluated and an impact assessment study should be conducted by the SATF. Another challenge that was identified was the high risk of the withdrawal of cases by the complainant. as a challenge. A recommendation with regard to that, that stringent measures on withdrawal of cases should be included on the Domestic Violence Act. And SACS and the Secretary should engage civil society and academia in exploring various ways of policing domestic violence, taking into consideration the social and economic context of our country. Another challenge with the implementation is the issue of command and control. According to the national instructions, the station commander must develop station orders taking into consideration the unique circumstances prevailing in his or his, in his specific station area. However, we find that most stations do not have the station orders, and therefore there is no clear guidance to members on how they should be dealing with domestic violence for that specific area. In stations where there is a station order, it's just a copy of the provincial order or just a copy of the national instruction. And also, the station commanders are expected to inspect the registers on a regular basis. We do find that registers are inspected regularly, as you see the signatures. However, the inspection just seems to be a matter of putting signatures, and it does not do the intended purpose, which is to help in correcting the problems that are identified. We just see that there will be some mistakes in the register and how the register is computed, and those continue even though it has been inspected. There were also some legislative gaps that were identified. For instance, there is poor coordination and cooperation among the role players that deal with domestic violence. The provision of shelters, as an example, is the responsibility of the Department of Social Development. And if in a certain prison there are not enough shelters or counseling services or places of safety, then it becomes difficult for the SAPS and the court as well to refer complainants. However, the Department of Social Development is not obliged by the DBA to ensure that these services are accessible in all policy and prisons. As much as the SAPS and the Department of Justice are obliged by the Act, Social Development is not. And according to the DBA, a complainant can apply for a protection order at any time or any day. However, this is not fulfilled in the implementation as courts only operate during working hours, and the SAPS cannot get hold of the NPA personnel on standby, as it is suggested by the regulations. The another issue is the management of protection orders between the court and the police station. There is no clear direction in terms of how this process should work. And as much as the station should, in consultation with the local courts, come up with a manner of how the process is going to be handled, there isn't. And it results in some instances in complainants having to being told by the police to serve the protection orders themselves. There's also no clear time frame with regards to the service of protection orders, as well as provision of this proof of service. With regard to recommendations regarding the issues mentioned previously, the DBA should enforce that a multilateral agreement be developed between all the government departments that contribute to the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act. This agreement should clearly define the roles and responsibilities of each department, the resources required for effective implementation of the DBA, and define the kind of partnership that will exist amongst these departments. It should also oblige all the relevant departments to report on their implementation of the Domestic Violence Act annually. The responsibility and resources and resource requirements for the service of protection orders should be clearly defined. In order to avoid the breaches, the legislation should designate one department, for instance, either the Department of Justice or the SAPS, to be responsible for the service. But at the moment, it says either the Department of Justice or the SASCAN, and that's where the problem becomes. Both the SAS and the Department of Justice should be obliged to develop a service level protocol that will clearly define the process of receiving and serving the protection orders. There are some plans to strengthen oversight by the senior secretariat, and these involve engagement with other stakeholders. Has made clear to the secretariat that the best response to domestic violence will be broad policy that is inclusive of community members, faith-based organizations, and any other community-based transition in order to come up with a model on how this can be achieved. The Secretariat will explore regionally and internationally best practices with regard to policing of the Domestic Violence Act and other laws aimed at addressing violence against women and children. A joint fact-finding visit with SAPS focusing on provinces that reported high number of incidents and those with the lowest, e.g. the Western Cape and the Northern Cape, will be conducted so that we can be able to identify what are the challenges there. Also, the visit to the basic training colleges to observe the method of training will be conducted. Public awareness campaigns to cover will cover the following areas: marketing of the Secretariat's role in monitoring the Domestic Violence Act, educating communities on DVA, and it will be carried out at provincial level in partnership with the SAPS, the CPS, and the National Prosecuting Authority. And then at the national office, we'll be holding a dialogue on improving faster response to violence against women and children, and this initiative will take place on the 22nd to the 23rd of August 2013, and it will be done in partnership with the civil society organization which is called Joint Gender Fund, and it will involve women and civil society organizations. Thank you.
Honourable members, you can tell your presentation. Honourable Mr. Major, Honourable Nelson.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So basically, we were on oversight last week. Honourable Martina was in our group. We visited a world performing station. I don't know if it's part of this, but we visited the Tali police station. I think I now identify with what the station commander, the race, the challenges of this command and control, the register. He does have some of those things. He has dedicated a person to these things, but still, Chair, we remain with concerns. One of the critical areas, Chair, was the issue of, I hear the presenter talked a lot about the inadequacies in the train as such. But, Chair, my concern is whether there is any work that is being done. I heard you think the recommendation on the multilateral plans or agreements with other departments to take responsibility for certain things. But certainly, check the issue around the disability in the implementation of the DVD is quite a grave area to check. And some of us who are related to that sector, that is the disability sector itself, knows things that are happening there that are sometimes not reported, not even withdrawn, not reported because those people cannot communicate. Some of them, they're mental, some of them are deaf, some of them, you see, for instance, she's mentioning the signing of a form in the user friendly language. If you are a blind woman or a blind man that is abused, how do you do deal with the form? So I don't know, Chair, but I know that in the strengthening of their oversight, I would like to, when they update us next, Chair, to see, and I would like their comment as well, whether they are even thinking about this or doing it, or if there's any work that they would be doing around this area. internal disciplinary matter, or is an issue that is dealt with in terms of what IPS normally does when this office is committed by the police. And then the third aspect relates to the facilities, lack of rooms, and all of that. The question is, if there is a national disruption, so then what are the issues? Is this resources? The issue is the lack of space in Dundee, for instance. 2011, when we visited there, we instructed them to find a new building for the space for the police station. They are now having that, but the building that they solicited is not implemented. Another Mandela, so the building is dilapidated. It's thousands of money just to put it in a state where the police are properly accommodated to their work, and it's an old court. That requires some attention in order to do it. It's not only that, I'm just making that because we presently see a well performing station, but that's not performing well in as far as TV is concerned. They are conceded to us in terms of their briefing to us. If there's a national instruction, guess a guide, some of these things. What is the hold up? I think is the question that I'm raising. Thank you, Chair.
Hello, Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in fact, the most question that I wanted to ask is about this national instruction. What is the problem with it? Why can't it be done? The other thing is that what worries me is here, I can hear all. I mean the problems that are there. I'm hearing a little about the solutions, but I'm upset with the other things that they have raised and they are thinking of doing. Now, I'm worried about this thing of talking about the drawers of the cases, because I'm interested to know the people who are dealing with these DBAs, how are they trained? I'm interested to know what kind of situation, because you're talking of domestic violence where a person will get to the police station because he or she is very angry at the time, but then an hour or two later she realizes that a lot is at stake. I'm not talking about money here, that because men they do have money, I don't, not money. But because people are family, they've got children, they've got everything, then when they're supposed to be maybe the fight is carrying on, they think about more other things that they are going to cost their children and other things. I'm just imagining how the police, because I'm hearing there's a lot of training that is needed here when I'm hearing, because the commanders don't know how to deal with the form. I'm just imagining. How are they investigating to ensure that the type of people that are going to deal with these cases are people that might need a broader training so that they can understand? I'm not attempting in any way to say because there's a ton, there's an argument that at times women they get angry, and when they are in these police stations they complain about monies and support. No, I'm not talking on those spaces. I don't want to talk about that. That is totally wrong. I just agree with it. But the issue with me is about their families. I'm just interested. I'm not sure how to put this properly, but if they are what I want to understand, what are they investigating in ensuring that to cut down on the numbers of the withdrawals? How do they find themselves, I mean, training the people that are supposed to be dealing on taking those cases, instead of trying to say them into the piece of legislation that enforces people not to withdraw cases. The reason is because I know what I'm talking about. I know what is going on in communities. And sometimes you realize that people, once they are already notified, that family realizes that children are suffering on the basis of the fight, and maybe the fight was not that much. And not to say was not that much, but when they win things, maybe they choose that rather they withdraw instead of carrying it on with it whilst children are suffering. This is what I'm trying to ask, and if you can help me to put it, I'll be very happy, but I think it's clear.
Actually, I'm not in there. If you really got the message, you can respond.
Thank you very much. The first question that talks to specific focus in areas of disability. I must mention that in all the work that we undertake as an oversight body, we ensure that when we go and evaluate the services or service delivery at a police station, those issues are looked into. And hence, we then make recommendations to the SAPS. Now, the problem is we can only make recommendations. And we do this by firstly presenting the results of our findings to the minister and then forwarding these recommendations to the SAPS. And we basically haven't had much response in that regard in terms of the implementation of some of our recommendations. And as a result, what we have done is that we have set up a forum just to look or to address the recommendations that are coming from oversight bodies to the SAPS to ensure that there's implementation and then there's progress in terms of or reporting on progress in terms of implementing those recommendations. But I also take note that this is an area that we can strengthen as the civilian secretariat in terms of our oversight. Though it is addressed, but I think we can do better. That point is taken. Now, the members that themselves are involved in perpetrating domestic violence, unfortunately, also it's an internal process. And as an oversight structure, we cannot interfere in operations within the SAPS. Again, we make recommendations, and we then follow up on these recommendations. And I'm pleased to announce that in this particular instance, because these cases were presented to the Portfolio Committee of Police previously, the SAPS has ensured that these cases are dealt with properly. So we will be reporting back in that regard as to what has been the progress with the members who have been involved. Now, in terms of facilities, it is a problem within the SAPS in that as we evaluate police stations throughout the country, we realize that there isn't enough space. It talks to the way the police stations are built. It talks to not having that clear communication between the Department of Public Works and the SAPS. But also, we have a keen interest as it's one of the minister's priorities. So we often then make suggestions and we then liaise with the supply chain within the national office to instruction is clear, and some of these members have gone through the training. But what we find when we're on the ground is that there either seems to be no knowledge of you know, the Act or the national instruction. But then also what we also find, you know, there's this culture within the SAPS when people feel that they, when they are sort of interrogated or questioned, they withdraw and they claim not to have received training or claim to have not knowledge of certain issues. And that's how, you know, I can only put it as basically the culture within the police service to protect themselves in other instances. The recommendation that was made to address training, it has been taken up by the SAPS. But what we are struggling with is that we don't see the training translating into action on the ground. And hence we have then decided that we need to go and observe the delivery method of this training, because something is not right and we need to ascertain where the problem is and come back with an informed opinion, basically, on what is happening in that regard. Now, solutions in terms of cutting on withdrawals and how these are dealt with, DBA is a, you know, socio-economic problem, domestic violence, sorry. And we have had discussions in our compliance forum to say even the officers that address DBA need to be of a certain caliber and need to have certain type of training. And that is what the SAPS is working towards, to say there need to be people who are so sensitive to understand the socio-economic sectors of a particular complainant, but also to make sure that these complainants are addressed in a proper manner. But as the cases that we are reflecting on withdrawals are the cases that are reported by the officers themselves. And hence, police officers see the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act as a barrier. Because one minute the complainant comes in, the following day they want to withdraw, or sometimes not even providing reasons. And once all the work that has been done, you find that then the case is withdrawn. So it's a problem, and this is what we then decided with the SAPS, that we have to sit down and look at involving other departments in the implementation of this of the DBA, because it's not a policing issue only. It also touches on the role of the social development and also the justice department. Thank you. I don't know if you have any questions.
Yes, before I follow up, is it a follow-up?
Yes.
Yeah, I think this one was really
sure if the Congressman is going to be able to respond. He's not specifically dealing with DVA issues within the SAPF. Perhaps what we should do is in the next session we should ensure that the relevant staff members are part of this meeting. Now, in terms of the disability issues, when we design our questionnaires as the civilian secretariat, we do this in conjunction with civil society. So there are reference groups that we work with. So our questionnaires are not just developed from our office without consulting relevant stakeholders. So the issues of disability that have been catered for in our questionnaires are informed, you know, by those processes. But all I'm saying is that I think the focus on DVA and disability can be strengthened in this instance, because when I gave you an answer, it was basically generally on all the work that we do within the civilian secretariat. But a specific focus, you know, could be given in this regard, and that's what I was referring to, that we will then have to sit and come up with a process that would ensure that that is addressed. And I can't remember, the second question was on the facilities. I thought that was also addressed, that was already addressed that question. I'll just ask my colleague if she wants to add anything.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of the OFCA facilities, as much as there is lack of resources, but the EPF has tried to put a number of victim friendly rooms in a lot of police stations. The main challenge is the management of those facilities, because you will find that in certain stations, because of lack of space, they tend to use that room as an office, and then it's no longer used as a private interviewing space. And they also indicated that for those stations that had nothing at all, they're in the process of getting a tender to, they've actually signed a clear agreement now, they've found the qualifying organization that is going to be implementing that rolling over that process within the next 3 years. So we're hoping that with the recommendations that we've made in terms of strengthening the management of those rooms, as well as the tender process, then that will improve. And then the other thing I just wanted to refer to, in addition to what my colleague has said, was the question around the how do we envisage the issue of the high withdrawal. As indicated earlier on, it's not only up to the SAPS, you know, to deal with that issue, because it is a social issue, and there is a need for the interdepartmental collaboration. Hence, we have recommended that we need to strengthen the interdepartmental collaboration. There needs to be education of the communities themselves. They need to be made aware of what are the alternatives. You know, what can they do besides laying a case? Because most complainants think that in the case of domestic violence, if they go to the police station, then automatically their partner will be arrested. But there are other alternatives. They can report the incident and only apply for a protection order. They can just request to be moved to a place of safety for that period until the issue is resolved. So there needs to be that interdepartmental collaboration whereby the communities are going to be well educated in terms of how, you know, they can go about dealing with the issue of the domestic violence. Also, the enhancing of the psychosocial services within the communities, and that will involve the active engagement of the Department of Social Development. However, we are also looking at the issue of training. How is it delivered? Does it respond to the social context of the issues involved? Thank you.
You know, the IT in the civilian secretariat, every time we meet with them, I'm getting a little bit worried, because I don't know whether it's me who do not understand, or maybe saying they were planning things monitoring, I mean, a group, they didn't do their work properly. I'm just thinking. Well, I'm listening to the social and economic issues that they are raising. But looking at what they are monitoring and maybe their suggestions that they are talking about, because you might think that they need now to broaden themselves in terms of linking with other departments when they want to talk about this. For instance, if you are talking about the alternatives, I'm listening to the case of alternatives. I know in the community where I'm coming from, many, many families have got protection orders. Many, too many families have got protection orders. But that doesn't work because it is clear when I'm maybe when I'm hearing to them that they can see that this might be a social issue which needs to be dealt with in another way. But my main worry is that I'm not even sure maybe what exactly do they need to do, but I think they need to sit down and think about this properly so that when they are talking about this, dealing with the broader community, and then, I mean, when they think about the broader community, they must think. They must think about it because it's not an easy thing that they are talking about here. And also when you are talking about the facilities, last time when we met with them, I remember, I think I did or them, but they were saying they don't have like transport and other things. Now I wanted to know maybe from them now, where are they based? Are they based only in the national office, or are some of them in the provinces? And if there are some of them in the provinces, exactly what are they doing in these provinces? Because it seems as if they are just maybe somewhere in the national office, and down there there's nothing that is being done. I'm just interested to know that. And I'll just comment.
Thank you, sir. The civilian secretariat for police is a national department. It's an independent national department which works with provinces through the Department of Community Safety. And we are in the process of being established as an independent department with effect from April 2014. And the organization is in the process of establishing provincial secretaries secretariats by April next year. So how we function right now is that we work through the Department of Community Safety. When we undertake projects as the MND unit of the organization, we do that in conjunction with the provinces. So all the work that culminates into reports that are then presented to the minister are informed by, you know, participation at national and at a provincial level. We don't have at this stage, you know, we're not organized as the IP when we have provincial offices. We have components within the MNE, within the community safety departments that we then liaise with. And we ensure that all our work and on our plans are aligned with those. So there is, we have a footprint at a provincial level, though at the moment it's in the process, you know, of being finalized. Thank you, Chair.
Now, Chair, they said here, when they are dealing with the police, they withdrew when they are interrogated. And now when they are working through the community safety, what is that? What is the community safety? Aren't that the police? Mm. Is that the police? If you can say yes, then now.
No, it's the Department of Community Safety at the provincial level. It's not
in the police.
No, it's not. No. We go and oversee what the police do at the provincial and also at the police station.
Community safety?
Yes.
That is how they are referred to.
The police management. We don't know how independent the
is. No, this is what I'm saying. Community safety is in the police.
At the provincial level.
At the provincial level. So those are the police.
The department in the province.
A Department of Community Safety. Yes. Out of the SAPS.
No, it's within the SAPS. It's run by the MEC of police in the province.
Are they civilians or they are the police?
They are civilians.
The Community
Safety. That's why we're referred to,
No, I'm saying the community safety, not why I'm offending. What I want to understand, Shepherd, what I want to establish is this community safety that we are working through in provinces. I've heard you already clearly, but I wanted to check. This community safety is within the police in the provinces, or it's outside the police, something else?
No, it's part of the
police. Part of the police community safety. I used to see those parties, the written community safety, the SAPS parties.
Thanks, sometimes the police have divisions in SAPS itself called community safety. The visible police section would have community safety sometimes on the vehicles. The provincial department of community safety is a provincial department, like any other provincial government department, that's not in SAPS, but the MEC has oversight over SAPS, so that department would have oversight over SAPS to a limited extent. That's
true. They're still establishing their provincial secretariat, so they are within the police in principle.
Can I make clarify? Maybe the confusion is because not all provinces call them the Department of Community Safety. Currently, it's only Western Cape and Gauteng that have those Department of Community Safety. In other provinces, they are allied to the other Department of Transport, Department of Housing, Department of Works and Energy. So then there will be that unit that is responsible for monitoring police. You know, that is, and they are established in terms of Section 206 of the Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to check with the civilian secretariat whether are they not trained as police? Are you all just ordinary people, civilians? So, okay, when checking, let's say what is happening in the police, when coming to the issue of the DVA, we find that the police are more involved. Maybe they are bullied. I don't know whether you have got psychologists just to look after them and so as to avoid this DVA. And when coming to besides that, let's say killings and the like, they commit suicide, or maybe it's because of frustrations, or maybe they are not monitored exactly. Maybe you don't know exactly what their problems are. Maybe have you just tried just to check on that? Because it will be difficult just to monitor police in that case. Then, and sometimes they use force. Thank you.
Thank you. As one of the recommendations in the presentation, we touched on, that the police need to ensure that they effectively utilize their wellness program, which would look into those issues, because what we find in most instances is that because the police are scared of being found non-compliant in terms of the implementation of the DBA, they tend to then withdraw, to say, you know, I know nothing about the Act, I've never been trained and all of that. We then said that there might be problems. We know that problem one is training, number one. Number two, we're not sure as to why they're not owning up. Those that have been trained, we're not sure why they're not owning up to say, I've been trained, I am capable of implementing the DVA. Hence, we then said we need to look into how the training is delivered. But in essence, most of the recommendations that we make, besides DVA, because this is one act, we look at Sexual Offences Act, we look at, and we use their own national instruction and the legislation to evaluate the implementation. So we don't come up with something that is outside of the law and their own policies to monitor the implementation. But what we find is that the role of the wellness, health and wellness program within the organization is not playing an effective role in addressing some of the problems, because you find that there's a lot of anger, there are a lot of deep-seated issues. We cannot do anything because we are outside the organization, we are civilians, ensuring that the police do their work as they are expected to in a manner that adheres to the code of conduct of the police. So it there are serious issues. We have made recommendations in that regard. And it's then up to the SAPS to then implement. I wish we had more tips, but at this stage we can only recommend.
Thank you, Chair. In fact, I want just to bring to the attention of the civilian secretary that men have used power to get sex, and women have used sex to get power as a result of that sexual misconduct. In fact, we find that now presidents have fallen, even CEOs have been fired and wars have been fought and the like. So when coming to that, as police, sometimes they use force. And women also, maybe women police also use their sex to get power. So I don't know, maybe when coming to that, how do you differentiate the two? And how can you come to the rescue of the police force in that case? Thank you.
Yeah.
How would you have
done that? Yeah.
What happens here in Kiribati, because you see the point is where they are saying the police, when they are interrogated, they don't tell the truth. Now I'm worried because I wanted to check what is it, there is no piece of legislation. In fact, can't they get to the police station and phone, write the report, the letter to the community commander or whoever, and they will want to know how many police have been trained on the DDA throughout the provinces. They can't solicit that information. And this is what I'm interested in knowing. If they can't do that, then it means there is a problem. Another thing, this question which was raised by Man Jimmy, this is what I was just thinking very earlier on before that. The level of training of these people in the civilian secretariat, what is it that they are trained on, like psychology, do they have psychologists with them, do they have social workers with them, so that even if they are dealing with these police, but they are able to detect other things which they can assist in their wellness department or section. That's, I'm interested there because I think these were the issues that I was referring to them before when I was saying, I happened. There's a lot of things that needs to be thought about this, and also a lot of training that needs to be done. I don't think only within the police, I think even among them themselves as civilian sectarians, so that, I mean, when they are dealing with this issue, they know exactly what they are dealing with. Because as a psychologist, you might be able to detect what might be the problem here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to getting information, yes, we are able to verify the records with the witnesses. So we'll get information from the station. But then when we compile our reports, we consult with the initial office to give us a feedback per problem. That is why we are able to identify that police officers can say they have not been trained, but their names will appear on the register of people who have been trained. And that is why we always have this, my colleague has indicated, the compliance forum with the SAPS, where we meet on a quarterly basis, you know, to discuss our findings and the recommendations that we are making to them. And then with regards to our training, I'll let my colleague respond to that.
Let me do understand that. Now, as an organization that is exercising oversight over the SAPS, we obviously need specific skills. And where we're lacking in terms of those skills, that's why then we form partnerships with civil society organizations. For instance, with an MNE unit, we have a reference group that consists of policymakers, academia. So all the skills that are required for a specific area, then we withdraw those skills from that group, and then hence I say the questions that we develop are informed by such processes. But we also ensure that we have people in the organization with legal background, with policy background, because you see, as an MNE practitioner, I go to a police station and I would, you know, administer a questionnaire, and they can give me any answer. It might not be the truth. But basically, I would have to then make sure that it's aligned to the policies. But in essence, sometimes the police are very clever. If they know that you don't know, and then, you know, they basically can play with you and give you information that is not truthful. So, and constantly as an organization, we identify the skills that are needed, and we then go out and make sure that we get people with such skills. But if we cannot, we then liaise with the various organizations to make sure that we do our work.
Let me take the opportunity to thank the civilian secretariat for their presentation. And as Adila indicated, we are not going to adopt this report because we don't form quorum. We will deal with them in the other outstanding reports next week, Thursday. And then this brings us to the end of
Now you can do that for me.